Good morning. It is so good to be here. You don't even know. Thank you for those who came Wednesday afternoon to help us unload. The worst thing that was broken was actually broken when we loaded the truck. So you're not responsible for anything yet. We haven't unpacked it all, so we'll let you know. But I do appreciate that. I appreciate especially Hunter for coming and help us with the piano. We saved that for him and I. Actually lifting this podium was a little bit harder today. My arms are a little bit sore from driving that big truck and hauling in all those boxes, but I do appreciate the help there. We are certainly blessed to be here. I want to invite everybody to come back tonight for 5:30. I know some of the groups aren't meeting, but I want to invite everyone, all the groups, to come back here tonight. The starting life group lesson actually isn't really a lesson. It's kind of just as we get started, life groups. The questions back to the handout back there doesn't have anything to do with this sermon, although it'd be fine if you wanted to talk about it afterward. But to encourage all the life groups to come back, kind of as we're forming our purpose of the groups, who's in charge, who's doing what, just kind of a good way to start off our groups before they get spread out. So even if you're not a part of this group that's here that meets at the building, I encourage everyone to 5:30. I don't know what that means for the food and all that. Whoever's in charge of that may bring your own bag of food. I don't know who's in charge of that. They may disrupt that whole plan. But I encourage everyone to be here for that. Our plan is to kind of visit the different groups for this until Christmas time or so to kind of get to know everybody and before the springtime. And maybe we'll have an opportunity to start our own group after a while. But want to have time to get to know the body. We are so blessed, like I said, to be here, and we have missed you. We have missed you, and we have prayed for you. We have thought about you. We have tried to keep up with you. I've tried to keep up with some of the teenagers who are now old people and that have kids and that are doing the things that they're doing. Every time that it rained in Oklahoma, I'm going to get mixed up. I used to always, when I talked about there, I would talk about Oregon, and now there is Oklahoma. So there, every time it rained in Oklahoma, which isn't very often, me and Leah would call this our Oregon days. Everyone else there would be all, so it's raining, where's the sun, where's the heat? And we'd be getting our cup of coffee, put our hoodie on. Well, actually there you don't need a hoodie, it's so hot there all the time. But we would call it our Oregon days. The past 9 years, we have served at the Weatherford Church of Christ in Weatherford, Oklahoma. I've served as the youth and family minister. And Leah served as, we had a college ministry. There's Southwestern Oklahoma State University is in Weatherford. And we have a full-time college minister who has a facility up on the campus. And Leah worked as his secretary. She was involved with many of the ministries in our church. But I was able to serve as the youth and family minister there. We were loved and cared for by an amazing group of believers and leaders there for 9 years. Our family's grown there. Peyton was 14 months old when he left, and now he's almost 11. He's going into fifth grade. Our daughter Finley was born there, and she's going into first grade. I said we were able to enjoy some great work there. My major focus was the opportunity to work intentionally with parents to help them raise lifelong followers of Christ. I really worked hard with from birth to graduation and then some to help us equip, encourage, and parents to do their role as raising lifelong followers of Christ. And I hope to continue to have that passion for your families as well, no matter how old your family is, whether your kids are long gone, you have grandkids, you're single, your whatever stage of life you are, that I can help you in that way, and we can help each other. Our son, like I said, is 10 years old. He loves music and acting and reading and writing, playing video games. Our daughter, Finley, loves to do everything a six-year-old girl loves to do, loves the color purple, dance and play dress-up and being with her friends. And we're excited to have them to be a part of the North Bend school system and North Bay across the bridge. They're excited about being able to ride the school bus. In Weatherford, everything was pretty close. It's been about 4 miles. It was 4 miles by 4 mile town, and we were able to take our kids to school and pick them up pretty easily. But they're going to ride the bus, and that'll be a new adventure for them, along with several other things. Just to tell a little bit about myself, some of you I know very well, but in 9 years I see a lot of new faces. Some of you are like, this is the first time I've ever seen you. And I hope to get to know you and get to know everyone else again. But I was raised in a military family. My dad was in the Navy for 21 years. I was born in Virginia, so I was raised as a Navy brat. And so got to every 2 or 3 years we moved to different locations. But we were always in the church. Both my parents were Christians and were heavily involved in the Churches of Christ. I was baptized at age 10. And after I turned 10, after I turned 11, actually, my dad was stationed in the Philippines. And we, as a family, we moved there. In my middle school years, we lived in the Philippines. It was an awesome experience in many ways, an awesome church experience. We met in home churches. My dad found out any members of the church body that was on that base, and we started meeting in homes, home churches. And we also found a Philippine congregation off the base that we got to meet with off and on. And both of those experiences were very foundational in my life as far as being involved as a young Christian, being able to lead in different ways. My dad said, hey, you have to do this, son. We need you. Me and my brothers, we got our first experiences leading songs and prayers and Lord's Supper talks and all that good stuff. And also being a part of that Philippine congregation, you know, a third world nation that's still serving the same God we have with greater joy than I've ever had. And what a great blessing to have been there. My dad retired when we were there and moved to Northeast Montana. Northeast Montana was where my mom was born and raised and on a homestead farm up in Northeast Montana. And then also my high school years we were there, and that was also a very formative time to have a home congregation. It was a church body of about 100 people. There were several families there. Had a youth group for the first time. We got to go to Bible camps and some youth rallies. But the preachers there in that state, I said I was a youth minister, but I didn't know what a youth minister was besides parents. Parents are youth ministers. So parents, you're youth ministers. I'm a youth minister because I have kids. But the preachers did all the stuff. They taught the camps, and they tried to get the teenagers together and the kids together and do things, encourage parents to do their role. And the preacher there, Dan Fraser, was a very impactful person in my life as far as modeling that type of ministry to me. I went to Yellowstone Bible Camp as a high school student and counseled there many years. But it was actually at on the mountains of Yellowstone that I felt God's strong calling to do something. And I didn't know what it was, but my answer was like Jesus' mother, I am the Lord's servant. And that prayer right there has been kind of a breath prayer for me that I've prayed continuously. You know, I don't know what I'm doing sometimes. I don't know where I'm going or what I should be doing, but my own response is, I am the Lord's servant. And from there, God was calling me into full-time ministry and went to York College in Nebraska. And that's where I became a fan of the team that I won't mention today. Some Oklahoma fan, my Oklahoma family told me not to mention that today. I said a little too soon. A little too soon. But they might be a little too happy, because when I moved to Oklahoma, Oregon had got Oklahoma in a game, beat them, and they weren't too happy that an Oregon guy was moving to Oklahoma. But I cleared it up real quick. I'm a Nebraska fan, but went to York College, and there was a very formative time in my life. It was a Bible major. I was actually a double major with Bible and education, so God kind of lined me up and said, nope, I want you to go into ministry full on. There I met my wife, Leah, and Leah was raised in California. Her father, Dan McQuitty, is a preacher, preached in California, and now he preaches up in Lincoln City, lives in Newport, Oregon. It took us to leave Oregon for them to get to Oregon. So several of Leah's family members have now moved to Oregon since we moved back, so now we're back to be by them. So if they move away, we'll know something. But we were after York College. I interned 2 summers in Kalispell, Montana, as part of my requirement. I was trying to get myself back to my home state. And after 2 summers of youth ministry, I thought, this is it. This is God's plan. Things are working out. But they weren't ready to hire someone full time. So I said, okay, God, I've been a lot of places, wherever you want. and really wherever you want. And I applied for jobs in Oklahoma that first time, Georgia, Connecticut, Michigan, Nebraska, and some little place on the coast of Oregon. And when we came here, flew into that little airport, Carolyn Gedney Grotsky picked us up. It's like getting picked up by my aunt and uncle. And we knew right away. And we had to commit to one more interview in Lawton, Oklahoma, and we had to go just do it because we said we were going to do it, and it was, again, clear this is where we needed to be. And we were here for 6 years, enjoyed 6 years of youth ministry here with you guys, and then we went to Oklahoma. We were there for 9 years, and now here we are. Now here we are. I enjoy running and traveling, playing Settlers of Catan. Garrett already said he wants to play some games, so we're going to hook that up here pretty quick. Love trying new food and being with friends. And like I said, we're excited to be here to catch up. There's more to that story than just that, but that's the Cliff Notes version of how I'm here and we are here with you. I'm excited to hear your stories. I hope to take however long it takes to get to know every one of you, get to know all of your stories of your past and your present and what your hopes are for the future. To hear your stories about your life and your families and your faith, and excited to get to know you, like I said, the new faces. I hope that you're welcome to come by here throughout the week and call me or text me or Facebook me or whatever way you communicate. I'm on all those. And if you have a new one, we'll get on there too. And to come by and not be a stranger in these early stages so I can get to know you. And you want to get to know anything about me, I hope to share that with you. But I want you to know that we're here. We are here with you. And to know, more importantly, though, that God is here. God is here. God has never left you. God has never forsaken you. He has never given up on you. He's never forsaken me and never have given up on me. Yet God, as the I am, the absolute, the definitive, the only, the true, the all-in-all, the all-powerful, the all-knowing, the creator, the sustainer of all the universe is here. And these first few weeks of our time here, we're going to be looking at some statements that God has made about how he's saying, I am, and what he has done, and what he is promising to his people. We're going to look at some statements of how some of these early followers of God, what their response is. Well, God, you are the I am, so I am choosing you. God, I am following you. God, I am going to put my trust in you. Because God is, we are. And I hope you know that we are here because of God. And God is present. And God is present. And we're going to look at some scriptures of God revealing himself. And first off with the life of Moses. So if you have your Bibles, please turn to Exodus chapter 3. Exodus chapter 3. To catch us up to the story here of we're going to catch the story here in Exodus chapter 3 of the life of Moses, that the people of Israel are in captivity. They've just been experiencing 400 years of slavery. Joseph had, if you remember the story, Joseph had been a part of Pharaoh's household and was blessed to bring Jacob and his whole family to live in the best part of Egypt, in the choicest part of the land. And the nation grew there right in Egypt, right in Pharaoh's backyard. But after so many years, 400 years of this family growing and expanding, Pharaoh became fearful. This nation is becoming great. And this nation, you know what? This nation does not acknowledge me as God. This nation is not bowing down to me. And that's a big deal. When you are Pharaoh, Pharaoh is God. Pharaoh is king. And so he was fearful of that. And so this powerful king makes them his slaves. So for 400 years as slaves, there is no rest as a slave. There is no Sabbath. There was no taking a day off. There was no day of rest to stop to acknowledge their God. And there was no day of worship for 400 years. Because Pharaoh was not going to give up this force of labor to some other god. And Pharaoh is evil, evil, evil man. He's just not a guy with a fancy headdress. He's just not a guy that's all handsome and makeup and perfume to look beautiful. And he did. He had the finest and the choices of all materials. He had servants that cared for him. So he looked like a nice, attractive person. But he don't kid yourself. He was an evil, evil, evil man. And we know how evil he is because you know what he was, what he called his people to do? Say, we need to stop this nation from growing. And how do you stop a nation from growing? You call about a genocide. Kill all the babies. Kill the boys. You Egyptian handmaidens that are caring for these Hebrews when they're having their babies, if it's a boy, you throw him in the river. Doesn't get much more evil than that. Evil, evil, evil. And this is where the nation of God was in. This is where God's people were living for 400 years. Keep your place there in Hebrews. We read this a little bit this morning. And all right, keep your place there in Exodus. But in Hebrews, it says this: by faith, Moses' parents hid him for 3 months after he was born because they saw he was no ordinary child and they were not afraid of the king's edict. By faith, Moses, when he had grown up, refused to be known as the son of Pharaoh's daughter. He chose to be mistreated along with the people of God rather than enjoy the pleasures of sin for a short time. He regarded disgrace for the sake of Christ as of greater value than the treasures of Egypt because he was looking forward to his reward. See, by faith, in the midst of this tragedy, of this fear of their of a child being put to death, Moses' parents had faith, and faith to do something pretty risky, pretty amazing. Well, you're going to throw my child in the river if he's a boy? Well, we're going to put him in a basket and then float him down. That still seems pretty radical. But it was covered in faith. God, we can't protect this child. God, we can't take care of this child. This Egyptian power is too great. If he's found out, he will die, and there's nothing we can do to stop it. We're going to put this child because we see that he's special. We see that he's not ordinary. There's something about him. And God, we're going to put him in this basket, and we're going to float him down this river and trust him over to you. Well, if you know the story, that he's floated down to where Pharaoh's daughter happened to be bathing, and she calls one of his servants to go see what that was. Opens the basket. Wah! There's a baby. She has compassion. Somehow, the daughter of the man who's committing, calling genocide on these children is saying, I have compassion. And calls her servant to get the baby and calls upon a handmaiden and happens to be Moses' mother. And is raised in Pharaoh's household as an Egyptian, knowing his Hebrew heritage. He was raised knowing who he was. That and who his people was and who God was. In the time of him growing up and learning the stories, we know that he at one point witnesses an Egyptian beating one of his fellow Hebrews, and he takes action. And he takes so much action and so much anger and rage that he goes and he kills that Egyptian. And he decides, hey, this is not good. It's not good for me to have done this. And he buries the man in the sand and he goes about his business. Another day he sees a scene happening again and someone says, oh, are you going to kill again? And that made him afraid. And Moses runs off to a distant land. Story is not over. And we pick it up here in Exodus chapter 3. Let's pick up Exodus chapter 3, starting in verse 1. Now Moses was tending the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian. He led the flock to the far side of the desert and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. There the angel of the Lord appeared to him in flames of fire from within a bush. Moses saw that though the bush was on fire, it did not burn up. So Moses thought, I will go over and see this strange sight, why the bush does not burn up. Then the Lord saw that he had gone over to look. God called to him from within the bush, Moses, Moses. And Moses said, here I am. Do not come any closer, God said. Take off your sandals, for the place where you are standing is holy ground. Then he said, I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob. At this, Moses hid his face because he was afraid to look at God. The Lord said, I have indeed seen the misery of my people in Egypt. I have heard them crying out because of their slave drivers, and I am concerned about their suffering. So I have come down to rescue them from the hand of the Egyptians, and to bring them up out of the land into the land of spacious land, the land flowing with milk and honey, the home of the Canaanites, Hittites, Amorites, Perizzites, Hivites, and Jebusites. And now the cry of the Israelites has reached me, and I have seen the way the Egyptians are oppressing them. So now, go, I am sending you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt. But Moses said, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt? And God said, I will be with you. And this will be my sign to you that it is I who have sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, and you will worship God on this mountain. Moses said to God, suppose I go to the Israelites and say to them, the God of your fathers has sent me to you. And they ask me, what is his name? Then what shall I tell them? God said to Moses, I am who I am. This is what you are to say to the Israelites. I am has sent me to you. We see here, in the midst of this horrible scene of God's people being oppressed, Moses being saved from death in the Nile, being raised up, now fleeing, God reveals himself to Moses. He calls him out. Moses! Moses! Now you have to understand this at this time. In this day and age, if you were to hear a sound of your name, there are several different sources that this sound could have been coming from. It could have been coming from a speaker or some audio device or from someone's phone or from a person. But here there was none of those other options. This had to have been a person. If someone is calling your name, Moses! Moses! See, God had never forgot about him. But he hears this voice, and I don't know who Moses is thinking is calling him, but he responds. Here I am. Who are you? Where are you? Not to forget that he's standing in front of, he's amazed by this scene of a bush burning up that's not burning, no smoke, this kind of, he's getting distracted from the scene, but God calls him out, has never forgot about him. He has not gotten too far away from the grace of God. This murderer has not gotten too far away from the grace of God. And so God calls him out, and he reveals himself to Moses. And Moses responds. It's important. When God reveals, there's a choice to be made. Turn away, think it's something else, or say, well, God, here I am. I'm in your presence. I acknowledge you. He says, here I am. And then God reveals a plan of redemption for his people. This is one of the very first places in the scriptures where we hear this idea of salvation. He says, so I have come down to rescue them from the hand of the Egyptians. He says, I am the God of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. I know my people are lost. I've never lost sight of that. I know they're in slavery, and I know they're in need of a Savior. People who are in need of a Savior are those who can't save themselves. And so you need a Savior to save those who can't save themselves. He said, I have come down to rest. I know, I've heard their cry, and I know they need me. And here I am. And I'm revealing my plan of redemption and of salvation for them. And now Moses perks up. Oh, yeah, my people, the ones I gave up on, the ones I was afraid of, the ones I ran away from. There's nothing I could have done. See, even as great as Moses was, and as he said, I don't want to be known as those people. I want to be removed from the Egyptians. I want to suffer like one of them. He couldn't save them. Moses couldn't do it. Only God could save his people. And so God says, so I have come down to rescue them from the hand of the Egyptians to bring them back. Moses is all ears. He's all ready. God probably thinking, go ahead, God. Go get them. Save them. You get in there. Go for it. Yeah, that's great. Because that Pharaoh is pretty bad, evil dude, and pretty strong and powerful. And I tried it, and I couldn't do it. I tried to stop it. I killed a guy, and that didn't work out, and now here I am. But now God has come to him and revealed himself, Moses says, here I am. And God says, I know the people are there. I'm going to rescue them. And then God invites Moses into a relationship with God to be a part of his plan of redeeming and saving his people. Wow. God is going to use Moses to save his people. He says, I am sending you. But not alone. I will be with you. And Moses says, well, who are you again? Who are you? I'm going to get this right, because this has got to be the right person, the right God. And he makes it clear. I am who I am. I am sending you to join in this salvation process for my people. God is here with us. He's revealed himself to those before us. He's revealed himself to the prophets, the apostles, to believers, to the church, to our families, to Christ. And now we are here because God has made himself known to all those before us. And we are built on the foundation of God and Christ as the cornerstone, and on top of all those who have gone before it, all the teachings of all those apostles, of all the men and women of faith that we have the stories of, and those 12 apostles that Christ called from the beginning and to follow him. We have their accounts, and now we're built on top of that, and God is still here with us and with his people. And God still desires redemption of all creation. He knows the cries. He knows the sufferings. He knows the hearts. He knows where each one of us are at. And he has not forgotten. And he has sent his son to rescue us. To rescue me, to rescue you and the whole world. And he's already done that. Salvation has already been given. He's already solved that problem. He's patient, not wanting anyone to perish, but all to come to repentance. God desires a relationship, though. He desires a joining together with him in that process. For you to join together with him in that work of salvation, and for us to join him in bringing salvation to others. Yes, there are those we care about. Yes, there are those we know that are hurting, that need a salvation. There's nothing we could do to save them from this condition. There's nothing we could do to get them out of that mess they're in. But God is the I am still today. And he's saying, I know. I'm here. I care. I will save. But I'm going to use you. Wow. Awesome. Awesome. You mean me? You mean these people? Going to use us? Awesome. God is here. Are you here? But are you here? God's calling, hopefully, has been starting to call your name. As I say the name Moses, are you hearing your name being called? I hope you have heard God calling you into something this morning. And what is your response? Well, me and my family, we're here. We're here with you. And I hope that you will be here with us all. And that, are you here with the Lord? And are you here with the church? Are you here to reveal Christ to this body? Are you here to reveal Christ to this community? Are you here to bring salvation and rescuing to the lost in this city of your town? Are you here to be in relationship with God and with each other? Well, as we start this new chapter of the church here in North Bend, I want to invite you this morning. I'm going to ask you to do something in a minute here, really, probably you've never done. You maybe haven't done it in a while. But I'm going to, and during our invitation song, I would like to invite everybody to join together up here in one big group as a sign to say, we are here together today at this moment, in this day, in this time, and we're here to be committed to God, to be committed one to another, for God to continue to reveal Himself to us, to be in relationship with Him, to bring redemption to this place and all the places that we might go. And as you're coming up, that's not the invitation. That's not a response for you. I'm asking you to do that. Please do that. And I'm going to say a prayer over us all together. But in that moment, in that time, if there's somebody who has something you want to confess, yeah, you know what? I want to commit. I want to recommit. I'm going to say, yeah, I'm here. Or I've been really struggling, and I don't know about that. I've been through some stuff, and I'm not sure about that. There's a time for that. Or you want to say, you know what? Enough is enough. I've not been trying to figure out if I'm good enough or I know enough. I know of Jesus, and let's do it. Let's get baptized. Let's engage Him in the waters of baptism. If that's something you're being called to today, what a great day to make that happen. So however you need to respond this morning, but I do want to invite everybody to join up close here as we sing here. And if there is a response that you need a prayer or need to confess something or need to make a commitment to Christ in baptism, I want to make that available to you as well. So please join me up here as we stand and sing.